Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody had a good weekend. It is game week. We've already had, you know, the first few games in college football, a pretty good ball game over in Dublin, Ireland, with Iowa State beating Kansas State. We can talk about that one. I mean, there were some other week zero games, high school football underway, but it is game week for pretty much the rest of the country, including the Auburn Tigers, who are on the road and will be in Waco Friday night taking on the Baylor Bears. And we will talk about that. We'll talk about what Hugh Freeze had to say today at his first weekly game week press conference. Now, it was at a different time today, Dan, but I should have thought about this, because generally Auburn's weekly press conferences are at 11 o'clock on Mondays. But you got to remember, this is a Friday game. So 11 o'clock Monday was church yesterday. You know, yesterday was Monday as far as Auburn's practice schedule. Well, so today, Auburn had practice this morning. That's why there was no press conference this morning.
Right, and we're still going to get Monday press conferences even when...
Yeah, we'll get Monday press conferences, but that will be an off day, and so it'll be able to be held at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze mentioned earlier in the preseason how a lot of the schedule has changed because of the season Friday. Starting on a Friday mm-hmm. night. And Auburn gives its first depth chart of the year. Not a, you know, still, I think if you expect to see a lot of different players at different positions on Friday night, the depth chart probably strengthened your belief.
Yeah, especially defensively. Now, offensively, 8 of the 11 spots on offense mm-hmm. have starters with then, backups obviously behind them. The only 3 spots on the Auburn offense that don't have starters, and this is interesting, are the 3 receivers.
Yeah, and one of the spots
I think you have starters there.
One of the spots where there's not an or is quarterback.
That is right.
And yet I'm still...
Well, there's an or as for the backup.
Right, and I'm still hearing a lot of talk about Ashton and Deuce, and I know Hugh Freeze probably talks about them too much for his number 2
right.
and number 3 options, but I'm still... Like, it's... I don't expect to see either of them on Friday night, unless it's a blowout on either side or Jackson has played his way to the sideline. I think those are the 2 instances.
I think you might see one of them, like, at a certain time.
I don't think so.
You might see one for a play.
I think if the game's...
And I don't know that they would line up necessarily at quarterback.
Yeah, and I think if the game's close, I would say...
No, the game's close, Jackson's your quarterback.
Yeah, and I think... And I don't even know if it counts if Jackson's still the quarterback and one of them comes in to play receiver as sort of a gadget play.
See, that's what I'm sort of thinking.
Well,
I'm thinking something
I'm
like
not
that.
Sure that well, I'm not sure that counts. I would say Jackson going to the bench and one of those guys playing quarterback would be the instance of playing a different quarterback, and I'm not sure how much of that you should expect to see.
No, I don't know.
I'm not sure how much of that Hugh Freeze is necessarily planning on using on Friday, and yet there's a lot of, I think it's maybe just PTSD here in Auburn about how much we've seen more than one quarterback.
It's always the new guy has got to play. We've got to see Deuce Knight or Ashton Daniels, but I think it's primarily more people don't care about hearing about Ashton Daniels. I think the fans want to hear about Deuce.
Sure, and I guess I sort of understand that, but I would still say, like, this feels like a situation, like we've had in a couple of seasons where there's a starting quarterback, and how the season goes, I think is going to, a lot of it depends on how he does. Like maybe Maybe that means, look, maybe it doesn't. Maybe he can have a bad season and Auburn can still somehow overcome.
I don't think that's the case.
But I think a lot of the season's riding on how Jackson Arnold does.
But I think Auburn fans are way too afraid that their quarterback's not going to be very good because of the quarterback play over the last few years. Look, I think Jackson Arnold is as set at quarterback as about any quarterback in the SEC. He's been the quarterback. I mean, Hugh Freeze didn't make a big deal of it over the summer, but he took Jackson Arnold to media days. Jackson's the guy.
And you could make – I mean, here's what I would ask you, Bill. Who was the last Auburn quarterback to have 10 players like this around him in a starting lineup? Like, when was the last time the guys –
10 players like this around him?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the last Auburn quarterback to have – like, take the quarterback out of it and look at the starting lineup around him. I know there's some questions
Probably Jarrett. Maybe not.
I mean, and even that's up for some debate because of and you had good receivers, but I don't know if you had
not like these.
Not like these. So I mean, this is a situation where part of the reason for I think expectations for Jackson Arnold, I think it should be based around, like, if you expect Jackson Arnold to have that breakthrough season, it's in part because he has this kind of talent around him. It's part of the reason he's here. I don't think he would have picked Auburn if he didn't think he had the talent around him to win football games. He would have gone somewhere else. He had options. And the fact that he's at Auburn and the fact that you've got, like you just said, as talented a supporting cast around a quarterback as Auburn has had in a long time. If you want to say 2017, you can. You might need to go back even further than that. And there have been some highly ranked teams in that mix. The 2018 team was a preseason top 12, top 15 type of team. So I think, part of the reason expectations for Jackson are reasonable, if you believe he can have a good season, it's because there is a group around him that would seemingly enable a quarterback to have a big season. Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, and they're not the only two. Hugh Freeze giving a pretty in-depth answer today about Horatio Fields.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the Wake Forest transfer, I thought it was enlightening when he said he's become the leader of that room.
Right, and that's he's the oldest player, he's the most experienced player, but he's also someone who, what kind of phrases Hugh Freeze talking about? Wisdom.
Yeah, he's the father.
A father figure, a guy with a lot of wisdom, and someone who plays football the right way, high football IQ. Bill, that's a guy I've mentioned.
And he's also talented. The other thing. Yeah. It's not just like, he's the old guy that they look up to, but the other guys are going to make plays. He can make plays.
Yeah, he's not the mascot of the wide receiver room. He's also someone that they saw on tape at Wake Forest making plays, he's had a very impressive camp. I mean, he's out there. I mean, you talk to beat writers who have gone to practice. He's out there catching practically everything, getting open, showing good speed for his size. Usually getting kudos on his route running. I think that's a savvy pickup. Auburn has a couple. Even though Auburn liked a lot of what they brought back, they went into the portal and found some really nice complements to this roster on offense and defense. And Horatio Fields appears to be one of those pieces.
Yeah, was interesting though that, like I said, only the receivers were listed. I think that is just a sign that they are planning on playing quite a few receivers. They have 7 receivers listed as possible starters because at one receiver, it's Cam Coleman or Sam Turner. Then it was Horatio Fields or Perry Thompson. And then at the third receiver, it was listed Eric Singleton or Malcolm Simmons or Bryce Kane. I think what that means is all 7 of those guys are going to get in the game Friday night.
And to me, the only surprise there is Sam Turner being in the mix with Cam Coleman. And I don't know if it's – I'm not exactly expecting a timeshare of an equal timeshare between those two when it comes to playing time. I think you're still going to see Cam Coleman quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, Sam Turner's had a very impressive first – your first few months on campus. Mm-hmm. That's every scholarship receiver except the Smith twins, right?
That is correct.
Who both showed up in the
they've only been here since August,
right? Their first taste was preseason camp, along with Omar, right? Who's also and I wouldn't read too much into how the running back depth chart right. looks per se. Although Hugh Freeze has said throughout preseason, and this is probably another example of folks wanting to see the new toy rather than this is Toy Story. Like, this is folks wanting shiny new spaceman instead of the cowboy. Like, Damari Alston has been the number one. I mean, he was injured when they started, right? He had the lower body injury, but he's, I think, by, like, there's the open practice at Jordan-Hare. The practice after that, or the practice we got to go to at Jordan-Hare, the one after that, Damari's full speed. And ever since then, you talk to Derek Nix, you talk to Hugh Freeze, you talk to other guys.
Damari, I mean, he's the first name, and he's the leader.
He's the most complete running back. He's the guy that seemingly gives them the best option in a variety of situations. He's the one that they want out there. I'm hopeful that Damari can have a really big season. He looks great. We had a conversation after the press conference today. I think he's got a shot of being voted a captain by this team.
Going to be interesting.
We're
going to
learn.
Yeah, maybe we'll learn on Tiger Talk tonight. We're talking with Andy Burcham about that. Andy said, well, he's going to ask.
And the votes Hugh Freeze mentioned during his answer about Horatio Fields.
He said Horatio got a lot of votes.
He said the votes are in. They voted for captain, and Horatio received a lot of votes. Stop short of saying Horatio received enough votes.
Well, he didn't want to announce any of his captains.
Stop short of saying Horatio had received enough votes to be a captain, but said this is a guy who received a lot of votes, a surprising number of votes for a transfer wide receiver.
Right.
I think both being a first-year guy and being a receiver, it's maybe difficult for that, for a player to impress enough of his teammates to get it done, and yet Horatio received votes. We were, having an informal balloting among the writers after the press conference was over. I would think, Bill, you can throw a name in there if you think there's someone else I would mention. And I don't know how many. They've used four in the past, so I would think maybe two and two is a reasonable expectation here, two on offense, two on defense. If that's what happened, I would guess two of Jackson, Connor, and Damari would be.
I would add perhaps Jeremiah.
Perhaps Jeremiah, perhaps Frazier.
Yeah,
I would say are also in the mix. And I guess you could say, hold on, you said Jeremiah
Wright.
Right. Jeremiah Cobb is also.
No, I'm thinking Jeremiah Wright.
Jeremiah Wright, maybe Dylan Wade too, a guy who's been around for a couple of years. I think there's some upperclassmen there. But I would say my prediction would be two of Jackson, Damari, and Connor Liu. Defensively, Keldrick Falk, Kieron Crawford, Champ Anthony would be probably the most Bobby Jamison Travis potentially in that mix as well, but I would think that Keldrick, Kieron, Zeke Walker, in that mix too. But I would I would agree. Yeah, maybe we learn that tonight as far as the identities of the captains for the 2025 team.
Yeah, we'll see if we find that out tonight. Tiger Talk, of course, coming up tonight over on Wings 94.3 right after we leave the air, and that's coming. That's at Baumhauer's, their first appearance at Baumhauer's this evening. 334-321-1390, that's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And let's get to it before we get to our first break. And Daniel is up first. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Dano.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are excited, as all of us are this week. I was talking to one of my coworkers today, and we were talking about the line that Jackson has to play above to not only just stay the starter, but be in a great position to be the starting quarterback. And then my buddy brought up a great realistic scenario. Say Auburn is up at half, 10-7, and Jackson's thrown two picks. Where are y'all's minds with that given scenario, up by only three with two picks thrown?
You sound desperate to see another quarterback.
Yeah,
Daniel.
That seems to be a very familiar thread, very familiar yeah. tone.
There seems to be a lot of excitement to see, and I'm not necessarily, but like just based on this line of questioning, seems to be a lot of excitement about when are we going to see Ashton or when are we going to see Deuce? And I don't, yeah, I don't know. Like I think it's Jackson's show.
But if Jackson struggles in the first half, but Auburn's still ahead, I still think Jackson's the guy that goes out to start third quarter.
Hello. And
hey, Brian.
I agree. I just don't think we're going to see another quarterback unless the game gets out of hand.
I think Auburn fans are so gun-shy. They're so...
I got to blame them.
No, I don't. But it's not Jackson Arnold's fault.
No.
I expect to see a pretty... And I think folks are really concerned about Hugh Freeze's comments about building his confidence up. They feel like, if there's a bad play, I still think Jackson Arnold has got plenty of gunslinger in him. I think at times they have to try to tone that down a little bit. I'm looking forward to seeing Jackson.
I am, but I'm also a little concerned too.
Sure, you got to be.
Yeah, you just can't help it.
It's not like the last few years haven't happened.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the biggest story, the biggest wild card. If he goes out there and plays great, Auburn could be a really good team this year.
They
could be. I mean, they've got a lot of other pieces, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's the same old, then everybody's just going to be so negative.
If it's the same old, then I start wondering, is it always just the person that's out there on the field?
We're running out of people to point the finger at
if
the offense struggles this year.
I think Freeze and Ken Austin and Derek Nix deserve to be examined, for the way Auburn's offense has been. Freeze the last 2 years and Nix and Austin the last couple.
Going to be hard to argue that Hugh Freeze is doing a good job if the Auburn offense is subpar this year. Like it's going to be maybe even impossible to argue Hugh Freeze is doing a good job if the Auburn offense is subpar this year. And I think that it's everything we've indicated is that Jackson, everything we've seen when we go to practice indicates that Jackson Arnold is the starting quarterback with a pretty long leash. Like I don't think they're eager to swap him out for Ashton Daniels, who just got here, as far as pull him out of the game and put in Ashton Daniels or put in the true freshman.
And that's sort of what Daniels started. I don't think it's that close that Hugh Freeze is ready to make a change after a bad play or two.
No, I don't think they're at that point right now. And
I don't think he does not give off the sense that he thinks either of those guys gives Auburn a better chance to win.
Not at the moment.
Than Jackson.
Maybe Deuce eventually, right? We'll see how Deuce develops. He's going to get playing time for sure in week 2 and week 3, and we'll see how he looks there, if you're playing him against Baylor, that probably means things went really, really well. Or
really, really
yeah, the another way. Yeah. But back to Freeze and this offense. He's got an offensive line where the top 6 have combined for 150 starts. He's got one of the best wide receiver cores in Auburn history, in school history. He's got 5 scholarship running backs. I guess 4 of them have signed with him. I know Jeremiah Cobb was committed to Harsin, but I think he signed with Freeze. He's got 2 5-star quarterbacks and another guy with 2 years of starting experience at a Power 4 school. So all the pieces should be there for this offense to be good.
And he doesn't back away from that. He said as much today. He said he knows when a team's, got the talent to go out there and compete and win. And he's not saying that this team doesn't by any means.
And nobody's saying they need to lead the country and average 500 yards per game and 40 points per game. But by gosh, they should be in the top at the SEC with this.
You know what? If they could average. And you would think they'd be a little better. If they could average as many as – they can average the same or better yards per play as they did last year and convert when they have opportunities.
And cut out the turnovers, then boom.
This team, they averaged – what did they average last year? 27 or something a game? It was 26, 27. I mean, now, granted, a lot of that came against nobodies. Yes. But that's the way it is.
But
if they can convert when they've had opportunities, this is a team that could easily average 35 a game.
Yep. And they got to figure out. I'm not sure about the field goal situation right now.
We'll have to wait and see.
I feel terrible. If Alex has had another setback, hopefully he can get well enough, or hopefully it's just one of those things where he has a bad week or so, and then it comes back and he's fine. I don't know exactly.
That sort of answer that, Daniel.
Absolutely. I couldn't imagine what pulling Jackson too early would do to his psyche after a second time in his career.
As unpopular as it is to say in hindsight, I think you cost yourself at least one game last year by benching Peyton for Hank. In hindsight, I think if you had stayed the course with Peyton and run the ball more instead of pulling him for Hank, I think you win
that one.
I think you at least win Arkansas, and you probably beat Oklahoma.
And Oklahoma's probably thinking they may have done the same thing last year. So that's crazy. Great stuff, Daniel.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, MauburnSports.com, here in the studio on the Monday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Demron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. And while we got a couple of minutes, really, really sad to see the news of the very unfortunate passing of Mike Cooper. Folks may not know the name, but if you've been to a baseball game at Auburn, if you've been to a softball game at Auburn, you know the helmet guy.
I don't remember too many games I've been to that he wasn't there.
No, me either. I mean, he's always there, and he's always, regardless of whether Auburn is up big or down big, he always had the energy and was always leading the crowd and cheers and he was a great guy as well as being just a great fan. Butch Thompson, not too long ago, either last season or year before, gave him a real Auburn helmet for him to be wearing. He really will be missed.
Worked at Anders Bookstore apparently at some point. Ron Anders mentioned in a statement. He worked for Ron's dad. Coached Ron's brother's baseball team. Brought Ron peaches every summer. Loyal to his people and his university, never to be replaced. Always to be remembered,
absolutely.
Unquote. And helmet guy. If you've ever been to an Auburn baseball or softball game, you saw Mike Cooper, and just terribly sad news. All the best to his friends and family. What a loss.
Prayers out to his family and friends and that he will be missed. Really will. All right.
Traveled from Clanton to go to those games too, which I was.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Was a native out there. So another example of his enthusiasm and desire to help his team.
Yep. Speaking of traveling, Dan's going to be heading out to Waco, and we'll be trying to check in with you a little on Thursday.
Early morning flight Thursday. Into Dallas, and then I'm going to spend a couple of days seeing the area. I haven't been to Waco before, and looking forward to doing a little exploring on the Brazos, and then checking out the game on Friday. They've credentialed me, so I'll sit next to Justin and bother him.
Nice.
Who's from anyone from the Supergroup making the trip out
not
there?
Not this week.
Okay, so
not
I'll text you during the game and bother you bother you that way looking forward to it. I know it probably I'm hoping they got air conditioning in the Baylor press box. I don't know exactly what I'm
walking. Yeah, you better hope that.
I don't know what I'm walking into.
I mean, I've heard it's supposed to be 89 at kickoff.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be 95 or something during the day.
Yeah.
89, and there's a chance of rain, so that means it's steamy. Probably going to be a little humid.
Yeah, also didn't realize I could maybe have the chance to meet Heisman Trophy winner RG3.
Yeah, how about that? He's going to be doing the color. You know, he's going to be completely unbiased.
About former?
Now, he does a good job, but it's tough.
Former Baylor Heisman Trophy winner Robert Griffin III is going to be the color guy for Auburn Baylor on Fox. If you're watching the game on television. Of course, you can also listen to the game on Wings 94.3 if you want to hear a different quarterback on commentary. Jason Campbell will be calling the game with Andy Burcham. They'll be in Waco as well as part of the
and Brett Edmonds Sports Network. Making his debut as that? A sideline reporter.
Yeah, that's awesome. Right. Brett and Ronnie Brown, both from the 2004
National champions.
Team.
I hope Brett's got his ring. We need to ask him about that.
You know what? If I didn't have one and I was on that team, I would.
Well, I think they did give him some.
They did.
They did give him rings. Yeah.
I believe they got Sugar Bowl rings that said national champion.
Okay. I don't remember exactly what it was, but you may be right.
It said undefeated champions or something.
They may have claimed the national championship for the rings back in 04.
They were ahead of their time.
But the university only recently claiming the 04 national championship.
21 years.
And speaking of which,
yeah, Brian, we haven't had Brian on since that was done. What did you think about that?
I mean, I'm thrilled. I think my degree is worth so much more now because it's from the 9-time national football champion. So I'm excited about that. But I think it's long overdue. I think this is something that Auburn should puff their chest out about.
I think everybody should claim legit, and they're all legit.
Be a Peacock, right?
Yes, I mean, that's right.
22 basketball, right? I think that's how Auburn should be. I'm excited that they made this move. I'm excited that they're retiring Cam Newton's jersey. What he did, his season was so special, not just in Auburn history, but in college football history, and that needs to be honored with his number up there. So I think both were really smart moves by Auburn. John Cohen and his staff did a great job behind the scenes putting this all together.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Cam Newton jersey retirement because the 2010 season, it's the Crystal anniversary. 15 years, and War Eagle Plus is doing a documentary that premieres, I believe, episode 1 of 3 premieres tonight on War Eagle Plus.
I got to watch part 1. Yeah.
Unspoken, the 2010. I also got to watch thanks to our friends in the media contact.
What was your favorite part of watching it?
Ooh, you know what? Seeing Brian Matthews walk away from one of the press
conferences. Yeah, I did make a little appearance.
Little Brian Matthews' appearance was great. You know what? I thought it was really well done, episode 1, because there are stories from – so what they did in episode 1 was sort of set the stage as far as how a lot of the principals from the 2010 season got to Auburn.
They started with Tuberville 2007-8.
Right, so they talk about what happened at Tuberville and how Gene Chizik got the job and Gene Chizik's process hiring various offensive and defensive assistants and the work they did recruiting. And that's important because you can't really tell the story of Cam Newton if you don't tell the story of Curtis Looper. And you don't tell the story of
the wide receiver at Blaine College. I can't remember his name.
That's right, Dex.
Yes.
And so and they mentioned Bill that it was good to see the Tiger Prowl limo make another appearance.
My favorite part though was the airport when Jacobs and the president were coming back and we had the "We need a leader, not a loser" chant and all that. I was like, that just brought back so many memories.
That's right. They did. And you know what? Even for a university produced thing, they talked about the for Turner Gill the desire. And there was even the story, I think Quentin Riggins tells the story in the documentary, Bill, that it was very important, no matter who was hired as head coach, it was seen as critically important that you had a staff of guys who knew the South and knew the SEC and had experience putting together an SEC-caliber roster. And with Turner Gill, Quentin Riggins tells the story that Turner Gill thought a lot of his Buffalo guys would really make a lot of sense coming down with him from Buffalo to Auburn, and everybody left that meeting thinking it's maybe going to be somebody else after Tuberville in 2008, but then you tell the story of how a lot of the other guys on the 2010 team, the Auburn careers they had, 2008 and 2009, and the team Cam Newton was.
The Cody Burns speech was great.
The Cody Burns speech is in there. How about a story Chris Todd told on this show a couple of years ago of how he found out he was the starter in 2009. The Gene Chizik and Cody Burns version of that story is in episode 1 of the documentary. And it's tremendously powerful stuff as far as indicating how tight-knit this group was and the foundation that was already there that Cam Newton was stepping into. And for all the talk of, and it's true, that Cam Newton and you know, is the only guy, especially on offense from that 2010 season, that had a lengthy NFL career. Cam Newton mentioned that the supporting, I mean, he was just like with Jackson Arnold, Bill. Cam Newton picked Auburn because they were returning.
Yeah, because they had all 19, the experience.
Yeah, I mean,
22 other seniors. Cam was 23, right?
Yeah, yeah. Cam became the 23rd senior, and you had a lot of starters from that from the 2009 team, and a lot of people from that highly touted Tuberville 07 recruiting class that were back for their senior years in 2010, and Cam Newton slipped right in and took charge, and the. You know, the rest will be explored in episodes 2 and 3. But War Eagle Plus, Unspoken is the really well done documentary, and folks should check it out.
334-321-1390. That's the number for you to be able to get through to us here on the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us.
Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. Hugh Freeze press conference today. Brian, anything really, you know, catch your ear from it?
Nothing really newsworthy. He was asked about Eric Singleton, said he looked good yesterday, I think.
Yeah, that was my main question, concern was, you know, how healthy is he? Because he is going to be such a big part of this offense.
Yeah, but special teams too, but feels like he's going to be close to 100%. You know, we'll see, I guess. Questions about Alex McPherson, of course. I think that'll be more of a game time decision on what he can and cannot do, and then who fills in for him in what capacity. I know Towns is going to be the kickoff guy. I feel certain about that. And, you know, if Alex can kick shorter field goals, I think he will, and they'll let Towns or Connor kick the longer ones. But we'll see when they get to Friday how everybody's feeling there. You know, talked about the depth chart and how the defense might play just about everybody.
There's nobody on that list, and we haven't really gone into it, but, I mean, I underestimated when I asked him the question. There's probably 40 names.
34 on defense.
Okay, I knew it was – just looking at it, I felt like it was over 30. Because I was in line with a question, and the first question I had was going to be Eric Singleton, and then I was going to ask about the offensive line, and they were the two questions just before me. So it's like, well, there were an awful lot of guys, but, I mean, I just guessed 30. But I hate
when that happens.
But I would not be surprised at any – of those 34 playing in the ball game.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think all 34, I don't think they'll play against Baylor. I don't think they'll play 8 interior defensive linemen against Baylor.
I do.
Maybe they will.
You know,
I think interior, so
that's two positions, that's, 8
I,
players.
I think it's especially, I mean, it's certainly, I think it may depend on how many offensive plays Baylor gets.
That's right, but, because I think if you get 3 and outs, you may not need to do that. But if Baylor goes on an extended drive, I could see you definitely subbing a couple of different looks on the offense, defensive line.
Yeah. This strategy about substituting on the offensive and defensive lines, I think it's especially considering how hot the first 5 games of the season are going to be.
Yeah.
Georgia at night's a little different, especially after the bye week. Mm-hmm. But those road games in Norman and College Station and Waco are going to be hot. And your bigger players, your line of scrimmage players, I think you want to solidify your depth there. I do expect, I mean, if we're talking 8, we're talking Malik Blockton, Bobby Jamison Travis. We're talking the two true freshmen, Autry and Jordan. We're talking Jay Hardy, James Ash, and then we're talking the Walkers.
Yeah,
those would be.
Laquibius was listed first.
Yes, he was.
And then
I think there's something too. Who is listed first?
Yeah, oh, I do. Yeah. I mean, if you look at who's listed first, it's the projective starters. I think.
Yep.
For the most part,
I think you listen to Vontrell talk about that was a couple weeks ago when we got to talk with him, and he talks about Zeke and Jay Hardy and Bobby Jamison Travis, some of these older guys that he's seen kind of grow up and evolve as football players. He wants to get them out there on the field. And he's had to play younger players, and I think he sees the benefit of – and look, if you got a younger guy who can do it, it's great. But I think he sees the benefit of a 23-year-old, a 24-year-old at that position, a developed, experienced option. And Zeke Walker is as battle-tested as just about anybody on the team, right? When you think about what he's endured.
Yeah, I think it's his fifth or sixth year, right? And
I would mention he might get captain votes.
He's a guy you'd love to see go out there and have a great year, right?
Yeah, you're not kidding.
You know, he's been a backup almost his entire career.
People have expected him. Right. Well, you know, he might be one to leave or something like that. No, he's shown how he feels about Auburn. And he's kept coming back and working and working. And I thought last year down the stretch, he was pretty darn good.
Yeah, yeah. And good for him to go out there. And I don't know if we can say he's won a starting job, but it sort of looks like there's a pretty good chance he has, or at least is going to start the game one.
But, I think there's a chance of eight, and that doesn't account for Keldrick sliding over, which also could happen too. I mean, I think they're going to cycle a lot there. I don't know on the offensive line. I think
Tuttle probably gets in at some point.
I would imagine Tuttle's versatility gives them.
They're not going to rotate that many players on offensive.
I'm not sure who else from the outside the starting five.
No, I don't think
Tuttle will be sixth and Dylan Senda is your seventh, but I don't know if he plays a regular rotation spot or not.
Senda, I feel like, is the guy we're hearing the most about other than Tuttle of the reserves. Mm-hmm. But they've also tried Dylan Wade at center, and I think they really like. Like, okay, so that was something we talked about. That practice where, like, Hugh Freeze was upset about the offensive line on Monday, and then we get to go to practice, and Connor Liu is basically inactive while they go with Dylan at center and Tuttle at guard. I don't think that was unhappiness in Connor Liu. No. I think that was lighting a fire with everyone else. Hey, Tuttle Miller's going to play. And it's a matter of where are we going to play him and how often
right.
are we going to play him, and are you going to do enough to keep your spot on the field or risk losing it? And I think that's got to be a powerful motivator, right? The thought that, at any moment.
We've got a guy who's been a starter in the SEC, that's right, that could come in for you.
At any moment, with the starting five, you could hit a button and Tuttle Miller's going to go out there if you think a guy needs a message sent. And that's something they didn't have last year. As far as their reserves, they didn't have a player like Tuttle they could go to and say, "Hey, he's battle tested, he's proven, and he'll be on the field if you're not doing what you need to do."
We'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about? Got any questions or your thoughts? We can go ahead and start taking your picks for the Auburn Baylor game. Give us, what do you think's going to happen on Friday? I mean, again, I sense.
What would
there's a lot of excitement, but a lot of just it feels like concern, almost afraid to really be confident.
I think it's what you have when you've had four straight losing seasons.
I agree.
Right? It's just how it is, right? I think if we were coming off a Tupperware year in 2005 or four or whatever, everybody'd be really fired up about this team.
Yeah, they'd be thinking this team's going to win 10 games.
We're going to win it.
Up to win 10 games.
We're going to win 10 games. We're going to be in the playoffs. Yeah. Anything can happen. We'll see. This team can get so much better by the end of the year. There'll be all this optimism. And I just think Auburn's got to go out there and get it going before that optimism really starts rolling in.
What would be, the tiebreaker, Bill? Remember when we used to do the pick'em with the tiebreaker?
Oh, yeah.
And we usually wanted the
tiebreaker to be the quarterback, right?
We usually wanted the tiebreaker to be something that we thought was going to play an outsized role in deciding who wins the game. Is it Jackson Arnold passing yards? Is that where you want? I mean, is that something where is there a number where if I told you, hey, Jackson's going to hit X number of passing yards, you feel pretty good about Auburn's chances of winning? Is it something with the Baylor offense against the Auburn defense?
It's got to be Jackson Arnold.
I think you're probably right. I think it's got to be something that has to do with, quarterback. That's probably
plus or minus 2.5 touchdown passes. I don't know.
I don't think it's touchdown.
If he throws more than 2 touchdown passes, I think
pretty good.
Pretty good shape.
Yeah. Although sometimes you can have explosive offensive performances without the. It's something I learned from the War Eagle Plus documentary. Cam Newton talking about his history with Auburn mentioned casually, and I'd never heard this before. That he attended the 2005 Auburn South Carolina game as a fan while he was in high school, came over as a.
I can remember him at a camp during the summer. As he was a sophomore, junior, but I can definitely remember seeing him out there at the old intramural field for a camp. Yeah.
And that game,
back in the day.
And that game's just an absolute demolition of. Mm-hmm. I think that's Spurrier. That's early Spurrier. At South Carolina and Auburn and Brandon doesn't necessarily have a huge performance statistically, but Auburn puts up like nearly 50 points that night. And so, like, I think, if you told me Jackson Arnold went over 2.5 touchdown passes, I would feel pretty good about Auburn's chances. But I wonder how much of it's just, I don't know. We'll think about that, right? Like, you know, what kind of stats you think would tell the tale of maybe even throw it out to the audience, right? Like, who's like a vitally important statistic in this game on Friday night, something that you think is something Auburn's got to do.
Yeah, that's what we can do today. We can take the
and if you're looking at last year's team, turnovers were a big factor for Auburn.
You're absolutely right. That's what I was talking about a while ago with converting things. Auburn would move the ball and shoot themselves in the foot one way or the other with either, you know, just a botched play on third down, missed kick, or turnover. Yep. It seemed like just over and over last year. Because, I mean, Hugh Freeze mentioned it today.
He talked about yards per play.
Statistically, I mean, Auburn looked like they should have had one of the better offenses around, but when you're dead last in the SEC in turnovers, that's going to show why you're not.
Yep.
Yeah, mistakes, I mean, you think about the Cal game, you have interceptions that crush you, pivotal mistakes against Arkansas, that late pick six against Oklahoma, right? I mean, there are some.
There's just so many. We could spend all day going through these.
but those are three games in particular where it's not just ineptitude or it's. I mean, there are some backbreaking turnovers that probably moved winnable games into, like, in that ESPN. Was it the percentage? You know, the game, you know, the likelihood of you know, the percentage victory, it looks like the stock market crash, right? Like some of those interceptions where you go from 90-something percent chance of winning
to having
no chance of winning. Auburn had a couple of those. Just it's hard to describe how important it is for Auburn to avoid making those kind of, you know, those kind of mistakes that back you up.
Right. Yeah. So we'll take your suggestions for our tiebreaker in the picking contest. Would you give us a score? And we're looking for a tiebreaker as well. We'll do that. But anything on your mind, sports wise, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Auburn, the legend.
ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment of hour number one. Let's get right back to The Drive hotline. And James is up next. Hey, James.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, bud.
Hey, so I got a question for you guys. So let's just say we're going to use Auburn for example, okay? Let's just say Auburn is in the situation that we have one clear quarterback as starter, and the rest, we don't know who's going to be second string. Now, if we were in that predicament, and we're not, but if we were, do you think the media would be blowing that story up out of proportion like they did the golfing thing and everything else?
Yeah. I think Auburn does have.
Yeah, I do think that's what Auburn has.
And there may be a question as to who your number two guy is. I think that's the situation Auburn has.
I don't think people care that much about the number two quarterback unless the number one quarterback is, you know, not performing well.
Isn't that his point, though? I mean, yeah.
Did I misunderstand?
A lot of people are talking about the backup quarterbacks right now. Auburn's got it. There's no question who the starter is.
Yeah. Did we misunderstand James's point there?
Well, the thing is, okay, I've been reading up about the game Friday, and I've been keeping up with what comes out of Baylor. And it's funny to me, and the reason why I make that point and ask that question is, it's funny to me that Baylor has a clear number one quarterback. Mm-hmm. But out of all their practices, they've said several things. They bet their offensive lines have been giving up 10 sacks of scrimmage up until last Saturday when they only gave up 4. And then they have no clear backup in between the other three quarterbacks behind the starter. I'm not saying that we don't have that at Auburn, but if I had to pick in between what we have and what they have, I'm more confident what we have than what they have. I'm not trying to be funny with that.
I understand that.
Yeah, the reason I would maybe pump the brakes on that is because of how well Sawyer played down the stretch last season. He enjoyed success that Jackson has yet to enjoy as a college quarterback. Not Jackson can't, but I do believe if Auburn had landed Sawyer in the portal, people would be really, really excited about what they have at quarterback as well. I think that's one of the strengths of the Baylor team is what they've got at starting quarterback as a room. Like when you factor in the number two and number three, I think you probably would say Auburn feels better about their depth. Than Baylor does, but Baylor feels very good about what they've got as the starter.
He threw 445 yards against LSU.
Yeah,
in a bowl game.
Well,
loss.
Again, LSU's defense has been just terrible the last couple of years. The other thing I would say is, look, Sawyer Robertson was nothing to get excited about when he was at Mississippi State or when he was a backup.
I forgot he was at State.
He was a guy that threw more picks than he did touchdowns.
Paid his
both
dues.
Places. Yep. So I mean. That's the thing to remember about Jackson Arnold. Young guys can get better.
They sure can.
So, they're happy with what they have. I think Hugh's happy with what Auburn has. Appreciate the call, James. We got to get to our top of the hour break. Stick with us. Hour number two of the drive coming right up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Oh, I got good news for you, Dan.
Ooh.
I was looking at there was a release last year about Baylor's state-of-the-art football stadium. So if it's state-of-the-art, I would think that it means there's air conditioning in the box.
All right, yeah. Depends on the state, I suppose.
Well, it does. I mean, it's talking about it. I'm thinking, God, is this the same stadium? No, but it does say 42,500 permanent seats strategically arranged for every spectator to get an optimal view of the gridiron action.
I've got some not-so-good news.
Uh-oh.
Fox and YouTube TV are in a carriage dispute ahead of the college football
season. No.
The deadline to reach an agreement is Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Crap.
Oh, boy.
That's according to On3 Sports.
That's not good. That is not good. Because you got it too now, don't you?
Okay, I'll be switching.
Now, here's the good news. Here's the good news, folks. Because it's a network game, you break out the bunny ears, you break out the antenna, you can get it over
the
air.
Get it from Columbus.
It's available over the air for free. But
who still has those things?
It's not me.
Well, you know what? They could be flying off the shelves on Wednesday. They could be
at the radio shack.
You can sell those babies right now.
That is not good news for folks who are open. And sometimes these things get settled.
Yeah, they do.
Sometimes they don't.
And Fox strategically
made the last switch.
I'll tell you what, though. Fox, just like Disney a couple years ago, knows that they never have more power than they do right before the NFL season.
Right.
College football, too, but the NFL season. The thought, because you start talking about missing out on Fox's Sunday games, that'll move the needle, and I would think this thing gets solved quickly, but make backup plans just in case.
No kidding.
If you're planning on watching Friday night's game on YouTube TV, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to make everybody upset.
Yeah, that's great. What a downer.
I'm not happy about it either.
Yeah. All right. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to The Drive. That's The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We're talking about taking your pick for the Auburn Baylor game Friday night in Waco. And we'd like some suggestions for tiebreakers. But whatever is on your mind, let's go ahead and get to The Drive hotline. And Brett gets us started. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. I keep hearing all this talk about Auburn needs to get ready for all these complex blitzes by Dave Aranda. Baylor had 23 sacks last year. 8 of them were against Colorado. They finished 125th out of 132 in pass blocking. and they had four against West Virginia, who was god awful. Anyone's going to look real good calling blitzes and all when you're playing with the athletes he had at LSU. Auburn might not score a point, but if we look bad, it's because we played god awful. They've lost the guy who transferred, who was going to be their starting safety. Aranda came out today and said, looks like this other safety is not going to play. I watched some of they've got a nose guard from Tulane.
Right.
345-pounder. I thought, well, this guy must be someone who just really holds the line. And I watched him play, and I know Florida centers, some consider him the best in the nation. Not one time in the first or second half did he either not get taken way out of the play or get blown 4 yards back. Not one time did he stalemate anybody. Their starting defensive tackle is 6'3", 376 pounds, and that's as of an August weight chart. He didn't play at all as a true freshman. Last year he played two games against McNeese State and against, who was the other one? McNeese State. Oh, and North Texas State. But this defense is not going to be this, oh man, they've really improved type deal. There's no way this defense they have is real good. Not at all.
It'll be interesting to see. Freeze talked a little bit about their defense and talked it up pretty good. Of course, coaches do that, right?
Yep.
But one thing he talked about with Aranda, who he's gone up against or has gone up against his disciples many times, he said, is it's not necessarily the blitzing, but it's the simulated pressures, which even if you don't get a sack, you force a quarterback into a read or a play that—
hopefully a false read.
Right, that offensively you wouldn't want him to do, and defensively is what you want him to do. So he really does a lot of things to try to confuse them before the snap, right after the snap, to get them to do different things, not necessarily, you know, getting the 40 or 50, you know, sacks season when he doesn't have that type of talent. But still something to be looking for come Friday night.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, anybody that they brought in from the portal, they had a better player in that position last year. They brought in a linebacker who looks to be good. He had over 100 tackles at FIU. Well, he had three sacks. All of them are against patsies. I mean, patsies. And they lost the guy who had over 100 tackles playing Big 12 ball. I mean, it's like that across the board. If they're two starting nose guard and defensive tackle, I know the nose guard ain't going to be applying a lot of pressure, but neither one of them can apply any pressure. I mean, Auburn will just have to flat out fall down and let them walk by them for them to get a sack. I'm telling you.
Well, I'm sure that Auburn people are hoping you are absolutely right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, like, it's harder to use last year to sort of project what a team's going to be because you see so much roster turnover. I doesn't mean I disagree with you, Brett, because I—
Okay, but Dan, the guy from Tulane, this is his sixth year. This isn't a guy who's, man, he's, you know, really big, really strong, really quick. You know, he just hasn't had time to develop.
Oh, I sure know. I share your apprehension about the moves Baylor made in the portal, because they're not necessarily— like, when we look at some of the guys Auburn went and got in the portal, you can look at who else was interested.
Auburn's addition from Tulane. Let me tell you what, Rayshon Pleasant.
I share your apprehension based on the track records of some of these guys. Now, at the same time, Dave Aranda has, at times in his career, been able to unlock this, although I think by and large, you would look at his record as a defensive coach at Baylor and say, he's only had a couple of seasons where the defense was up to expectations.
Now, granted, he did take over. He took over the defensive play calls last year. But yeah, to your point there, Brett, DJ Durkin has had more success at different places with defenses than Dave Aranda.
And aside from the 12, I mean, I don't want to just say it was all LSU, because Dave Aranda has had a 12-win season at Baylor.
Right.
And the defense finished, I think, in the top 10 in scoring defense nationally that year. But I would agree. You know, a lot of that, a lot of, you know, your original point about Dave Aranda being, you know, a guy who can consistently disrupt quarterbacks, that has that reputation has taken a hit a little bit, although I think Auburn is taking that threat very seriously as they get Jackson Arnold ready for Waco on Friday.
Well, last thing, I'm not saying Auburn can't lose, but let's put it, if it was basketball, for Auburn to lose, Auburn would have to shoot 10% from three-point range. Y'all have a great evening.
I appreciate it, Brent.
And
that's what you want to have, that confidence, right?
And sometimes you're cold from the outside.
Yeah. Right? I mean, sometimes. And here's the, like I said, there's a chance of rain. What if the football's slippery and
the turf is really hot, right? Yep. And the crowd is louder than they expect. It disrupts things. It's game one.
If Auburn turns the ball over, like we were just talking about a while ago.
I think if you're Baylor, which is crazy to say because Sawyer did have a strong second half of the season. I wonder if you're Baylor, if you would welcome a monsoon and sort of a game that makes this like
I think you absolutely would.
Yeah, yes. I think if you welcome a game that sort of neutralizes precision and speed advantages for wide receivers and just makes it a sloppy, you know, fight in the mud between two teams that, you know, really low scoring. Like I wonder if that's
no, I don't think that's an outlandish thought. I mean, all right, look, we were talking about this a while ago, Dan, before the press conference. Brian, love your thoughts. Did you watch any of the Iowa State Kansas State game?
A little bit, not as much as I wanted to.
Those are considered two of the better teams in the Big 12, where Baylor is supposed to be right there with them.
Yeah.
Did those two teams look like SEC, like they could compete with the upper crust of the SEC?
No, you never know, but no.
No, they did not. I mean, it was a good ball game. It was competitive. Yeah. It just didn't look like SEC football. Auburn has shown they can compete with those, and I think they're more talented than they've been. So, I mean, I think Baylor probably wouldn't mind something like that, because I think Auburn's going to be more athletic. They're going to have more speed than Baylor does.
And this isn't last year. Again, you know, want to repeat that.
Right.
You know, I look at
Thank
the
te- God it's not
well,
last
that's
year.
What I mean. That's what I mean. Because I look at the teams Baylor beat down the stretch last year, and I think, I know Texas Tech was 5-2 when Baylor, you know, after Baylor beat them. But by and large, it's also, there are games where, you know, those teams didn't finish with overwhelming win-loss records.
Right.
At the same time, I think most of the teams Baylor beat last year probably were as good or better than the Vanderbilt team.
Vandy, Arkansas.
That came to Auburn and won. So, I mean, you need to move on from last year, and I think for Auburn.
Yeah, they were able to win those ball games against those teams.
Exactly.
Auburn did not.
Auburn's got to be hoping they can turn the page and unlock sort of what, you know, those things you need to do to win those games.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. Dan, hopefully we see you on the flight on Thursday. We may end up, me and my whole five may end up being row buddies with you.
Okay, I'll be looking for you early Thursday morning.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. We've got the 4-year-old going with us, and I'm not a fan of having to pack all of her things to make this trip. But we're gonna try it. So,
well, good luck.
Hey, look, I heard several other people say roughly the same thing y'all did. Did Kansas State and Iowa State look the part and all that other kind of stuff over the weekend? Those two teams had just spent a week in Ireland. I would be more impressed if they came out looking sharp and looking crisp than I am unimpressed in the way they play. Like the Florida State was, who was it last year played in that game? Was it Florida State, Notre Dame?
Georgia Tech beat Florida State.
That game wasn't pretty, but you know, at the end of the year, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame were pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I don't put a whole lot of stock into the way those teams that play in Ireland look.
That's an interesting point.
I guess.
International travel, that. I would worry more about the game after you come back mm-hmm. than the game there. But you're that's right. Maybe that's not conducive to bringing the best out of a team.
No. Like, I saw some of the highlights and some of the clips of the things that those teams got to do. That was a bowl game. And that was a bowl game in flipping Ireland for a bunch of 20-year-old kids. Those teams are not going to look exceptionally good to start the season.
I can't imagine 18-year-old me having a good time in Ireland on a Patriot.
Not having
trip.
A good time?
No, having definitely having a good time.
Yeah, yes. You wouldn't be on the flight back.
Probably not.
They'd have left you there.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to the trip. I'm hoping the weather is better than y'all are saying it's going to be. Everything I've seen, especially I have someone who works for Baylor who I am going to visit with. And so we have a place to stay. We're staying for 4 days. We're doing the Waco thing. But I'm hoping that we get just slightly cooler temps than what y'all are talking about.
See, I hope so for you. Yeah, I was more surprised by the report of rain in the forecast on Friday night than I was about. Because I think Hugh Freeze has been bracing for a game that is 88 degrees or hotter at kickoff than because of that's if you do the rolling average on this week in Waco, Texas over the last couple of years, that's about where you land on. But I think that and rain and some cloud cover may provide some relief there, but I don't know if Auburn necessarily wants to play this game in a situation where the weather is disruptive, like wind and rain could be.
Well,
potentially
to this
offense.
So I just was told that, or I heard that earlier today. When I look, I just see like a partly cloudy and a 20-something% chance of rain. So it still says 90. God it's not Thursday. Look at the high Thursday. The high Thursday is 98.
Oh, gosh.
I've already seen that. I'm hoping that just means that we are bringing the cooler weather us when we go out there. They've got a sprint turf field. Like, as long as it's not a monsoon, like, you're not worried about, like, playing in slop. Mm-hmm. It's not like an old day where you'd be worried about, like, a mud bowl if it were raining.
No, I think the 90-degree temperature will do something about that rain really quickly, too. Right, you'll get some of that on the I think that you could see. I think sundown is scheduled for like sunset scheduled for 7:19, 7:20. Ballpark.
Right after kickoff.
Yeah, you'll get sunset right after kickoff, and hopefully a nice night of week one football.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Dan, see you out there, man.
Absolutely appreciate it, Jeremy.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. More of your calls. Carrie, and then who have we got after Carrie?
Rob.
Carrie and Rob. Hang on, guys. You're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock, and we have a full bank of calls, and Carrie gets the start of this hour, this segment. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, guys. Just a couple of things. First of all, if the weather turns bad as far as rain, that type of thing, I like our chances as far as just pounding the ball on. I think our offensive line is not being talked about enough. I think this line has a chance to be one of the better ones in the country, and I like our running back room. And if it comes to a ground attack where we because of the weather, I like our chances just to run the ball on them and wear them down. But I look for Auburn to win this game big. I'm predicting like 35-17. Wow. I like I'm kind of like everybody else. Here's the thought in the back of my mind, because of the past couple of years. Well, what if Jackson Arnold? I think he's going to be fine, and I still kind of worry about the play calling as far as I worry about if we get a drive going. you know, we get inside the red zone, and, you know, sometimes he has a chance to get fancy, like he did, you know, throwing a flea flicker or something like that. Nature said just pounding the ball and getting it onto the end zone. So I kind of, you know, worry about things of that nature. But, you know, I mean, I like this as far as the talent level and you know, the defensively especially. I like this team. And I just, you know, I could be wrong, but I see a 9-3, 10-2 season, and I see us winning big Friday night. I really do.
I'll tell you what's impressive. You know, if you're right, and I think there's a chance you're right. You know, we'll see. But if you're right, like, considering how much is new about this Auburn offense, you got a new quarterback. You got running backs replacing Jarquez. You got two new tackles. Singleton's new. Horatio's new. If you've got enough new, if this thing is sharp immediately, I mean, they're probably not. It's probably not a finished product in week one.
No, for anybody.
One would think this thing's going to improve and has the chance to improve considerably from week one to week six or week seven, depending on how these pieces gel. And if it's sharp immediately, that's a shot across the bow to the rest of the teams on Auburn's schedule.
Yeah, that's a great point. But I like a mixture of the new and old. I mean, like, obviously, line, we have Connor Lue, third-year starter. You know, Dylan Wade, Jeremiah Wright. These guys have been playing ball for a while. You throw an Xavier and Mason Murphy coming in. I think they've got a nice mixture there. And the receivers, I mean, you know, you got Cam's going to be a year older, Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons, all these guys, you know. So, but I see what you're saying, Dan. You know, as far as, yeah, they, you know, that may not look picture perfect coming out, but I think they're going to be better than everybody thinks. But I agree with you. I think as the season goes, you know, I can see this offense just getting better and harder stuff, just like the defense. I think the defense is going to, you know, as the year goes on, it's just, you know, there's no telling how hard they're going to be able to move the ball on. But,
yeah, if this thing looks sharp, we appreciate the phone call. Good stuff. If this thing looks sharp, right? I mean, from the moment they take the field Friday night, that's, I mean, what you know?
Yeah, reason to be really, really excited.
Could be the start of something big.
Yep. I'll throw something out there. Could Keldrick Falk have a Nick Fairley type of year? I mean, there haven't been many Nick Fairley type years in the history of Auburn football or SEC football, right?
The thing is, especially if, and the other thing that we've heard an awful lot of toward the end of fall practice is Keyron Crawford.
Yeah.
If Auburn's got another guy who is a disruptive force, who do you double?
Yeah.
Who are you doubling? You know, if you can't double Keldrick Falk, he has a chance to have a very special year.
Auburn has had two players, so they've been giving out SEC Defensive Player of the Year since 2002. That's when they split the award and made an offensive and defensive.
Now, the 80s, they had some incredible defensive players.
Auburn's had two players win the award. Fairley in 2010, Derek Brown in 2019.
Yeah, very deserving.
Keldrick Falk is as good, has as real of a chance to win the award this year as either of those guys did going into those seasons. He's as good as either of those guys.
I mean, no, I agree.
Yeah, so I think that's the kind of player. And I don't know how many times you would have said that going into a season. That you have a player on the team, defensive player of the year caliber type of talent anywhere on the defense. You've got that this year in at least one spot in Keldrick Falk.
And Keldrick, you've watched him. He's gotten better every single year. And you see him now going through practice. It's just like a different level. Like you know this guy's going to be playing on Sunday next year and being really good right away.
Back to the drive hotline. And Rob is up next. Hey, Rob.
Hey, if Auburn football and the fan base in particular were a patient of mine, and I was a psychiatrist, I was a head shrink, I would say to them, the last 5 years, you know, you can't have a new reality with an old mentality. If you think about the last 2 years, Jackson Arnold, if he's your quarterback, and forget, if you don't know what happened to him at Oklahoma last year, then you're not a real fan. Nobody succeeds in that. And I just think that Auburn fans are waiting for the other shoe to drop. I got Auburn at winning 10 this year. And if it was any other school, bringing in Eric Singleton, bringing in Horatio Fields, which, you know, is he the next Evan Engram, a player I think Freeze coached in Ole Miss, a hybrid tight end wide out. You know, an offensive line Auburn hadn't had this kind of experience on the offensive line since 2017. Okay? Now you've got a much more explosive, historically, play caller in Hugh Freeze. And I'm, y'all are right. Keldrick Falk, Malik Blockton, you're bringing in DeMarcus Riddick. These guys are a year older, and I think they're going to be a year better. And all this stuff about, you know, it's a really slow news cycle. It's very common. Find us on the headset. If it's a running play, you'll say to your running back coach, you know, say, Derek, what do you got? Receiver play, Marcus, what should we call? That's not uncommon. And a coach getting mad and throwing his visor in practice, oh, my God. You know, I think Auburn fans need to embrace the fact that this is a pretty damn good team. The roster is a lot better. It's 180 degrees different than it was December of 22. And just be okay with, because the last 2 years, there's been one blowout in the SEC, and that was at LSU in 23. It's not a monumental leap to go from 5-7 to 10-2 when you held seven of your opponents to 21 points or less, and you lost games because of living brain donor stupid mistakes. And I think you fixed this stuff. Auburn fans, it's okay to come out and play. If the storms have passed over, embrace being successful, because I think this team is going to be pretty darn good this year. Am I nuts?
A lot of that makes perfect sense, Rob.
You were in 10 of the 12 games last year, right? I mean, you could say, and you could argue about, you know, how seriously you were able to challenge in Athens or in Tuscaloosa, but I mean, you were in 10 of those games last year, and you've changed enough that I don't think you should just necessarily expect the same result in every single instance. One year later, a lot is different here, like it is elsewhere in college football. And, you know, generally speaking, I think back to when a couple of years ago, this is a deep pull, but when Georgia destroyed Oregon in Bo Nix's first game as Oregon's quarterback, and somebody asked Kirby Smart after that game, you know, how do you do this? How do you get the? And he said, it's not me. I have better players than the other team. Like, it's not that I have this special sauce. It's that when you have better players.
You just described Alabama for 17 years.
I think Hugh
Freeze. They always had better players.
And if you ask what's different about this team versus Hugh Freeze's first 2 years at Auburn, you can truthfully, and let's look to Brian, who's followed the recruiting of every single one of these guys. You can say he's got better. He's got better players than he did in his first 2 years.
Still got to see it before I'm all the way out there. You know.
Well, I want to say to y'all, this program, and I've been following Cameron since the late '70s, back when he used to play Elmer's tune at WAUD AM 1230.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, wow. But look, nobody, y'all get it, and I'm telling you. Y'all know Auburn on a level that's unmatched anywhere. And I'm driving back from Memphis right now. Just listening to this conversation, Carrie's a very smart caller. Auburn fans, embrace success. Again, you'll never have a new reality with an old mentality. Those losses the last few years can be fixed. You're right. The better players are here. Hey, Gordon Ramsay's a great chef, but if you give him crappy food in the kitchen, he'll look like Uncle Charlie from My Three Sons. War Eagle, y'all have a great day.
I mean, I've never heard this.
Rob's got so many of them.
Wow. I love it. I love
so much confidence on the show right now. It's amazing.
Be
a peacock.
Well, the thing is, if you're not now, I mean, you know.
By the way, have you looked? You
haven't played and lost yet.
That's right.
Have you looked at Kirby's record in Athens? By the way, somebody showed me this.
Pretty good.
Okay, Kirby Smart.
Have they lost five games?
How many times do you think Kirby Smart has lost in Athens as Georgia head coach?
I'd say fewer than five times.
He's lost four times Georgia head coach. How many of them were in year one?
Probably half of them.
Three.
Okay.
His four losses at home as Georgia's head coach were in year one. Since the start of the 2017 season, he has lost once at home. It was as a 24.5-point favorite to Will Muschamp's South Carolina team in double overtime. That's the one Georgia home loss since the start of the 2017 season. Yep. I believe 47-1 is the record in Athens. It is, and it doesn't get mentioned enough, it is the hardest place to win in college football right now. It is the hardest place, I mean, between the environment and more particularly the roster.
Yes,
it is the
particularly the roster.
It is the hardest place to go in college football and get a win, and that's just, I mean, that's Spurrier in the swamp. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he's turned that place into.
Well, that's what Saban was. That's what, you know, Nick Saban lost 6 games his first year. I think he lost 7 games the next 8 years.
And to pivot this back to Auburn, if Hugh Freeze wants to turn this around, winning home games is vitally important.
You're absolutely right.
And he gets a shot at that Georgia team in week 6.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Tex, hang on. You're up when we come back for the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in to the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. Drew at the controls, and yeah, we needed a break in between Rob and Tex. Tex, how you doing, man?
Hey, bud.
Hey, if I was Rob's psychiatrist, I'd be rich.
But
I can say that because we've known him a long time.
Yeah, we have,
haven't we, Bill?
Yes, we have.
A long time. Sorry, Rob, you just left yourself open. And Dan, if I was your psychiatrist, I'd tell you to quit mentioning Kirby Smart and how well he's doing at Georgia on the Auburn network.
Hey, it's something to aspire to, Tex.
Could have been the coach in 2013.
Yeah, could have.
Without question, but I will just tell you this. I've never met a football coach, baseball coach, or basketball coach that ever said I was a better coach when he had better players. So he or she, they're always better when they have better players, and that's the key. Coaching is one thing. Getting them there is the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're loaded in your lineup, you're going to be pretty good.
Like Auburn baseball in next spring, maybe.
Sorry. Yeah. So, by the way, I called for something completely different. My phone rang twice today regarding Mike passing away.
Yeah.
The first one was from Auburn to let me know. So it reminded me of the story when I first ever met him. Chris Sin sees me walking on the concourse and yells text. And he stops me. He goes, "Are you Tex from the radio?" I said, "Yeah, I'm Tex from the radio." So my wife loves you, and his wife is probably listening. Maybe not today, but she listens on a regular basis. Brought me over to meet his wife, and every time I've walked in that stadium since, and they're there, they come up and say hello. So it's going to be sad this coming season not to see Mike there. And the second call also about Mike came from a guy named Chris Guyot. Any of y'all know who Chris Guyot is?
Yep.
Yeah, the loud voice of LSU baseball, the LSU cheer, just about everything else that they start up. And Chris called to say, and Chris had met him. Chris came over during the series this year and came up to me and said, "Come to introduce me to Mike." And he called him Helmet Guy.
Yeah, that's right.
He said Helmet Guy. He didn't call him Mike. And introduced him to Mike, so I took him over. They talked for 4 straight innings.
Wow.
Together standing there. So it was pretty cool to see that, you know. 2 guys that kind of do the same thing at both ballparks.
Mm-hmm. And
it was really kind of neat to watch. It's a really sad story, but I hate that we lost him. We all go sooner or later, but sometimes some of us do go too soon.
Oh, no
question. So that being said, I'm driving in my truck and it's 107 degrees.
In your truck?
Yeah,
I hope it's not 100.
That's what the outside temperature is supposed to be.
Man, that's really bad if it's 107 in your truck.
No, it may be on fire, Tex. It's about 60 degrees.
There you go.
That's 20 minutes. So I'm smart enough to start it from inside the office before I get into
that's it.
Oh,
but, nice. Man, I would tell you what, heat on turf is miserable,
mm-hmm.
just miserable. And you want to know what makes it even worse? If it rains and some of the water sits on the turf and then it gets hot again, that's miserable. So there's chances, depending on rain or not rain, that environment, the cooler temperatures would really be nice. Even if it's 90 instead of 100, that's much better for our guys, but also like our depth. So, it's interesting, Brian, your comparison of Falk I actually thought of an old school Donnie Humphrey.
Oh yeah,
he reminds me of that, and the kind of the Doug Smith type guy too. Very physically impressive, that can really run. I think he's going to be a superstar for a long time, barring any injury.
Yeah.
And last but not least, and I sometimes think Auburn fans just can't get out of their own way, and they're not happy unless they're sad. Brian, there's a reason I got away from message boards, and yes, fans is the number one reason, especially those that don't use their real name.
Yeah.
So it's just become so easy to be so bitter and so upset, and we're starting a new year. This is when we're supposed to be excited. That's okay, right, to be excited. So I love it. And Rob, I was just messing with you, although you are crazy. All right, talk to y'all later.
All right, Tech. Good hearing from you.
Bye.
Yeah, glad it's not 107 in his truck. But yeah.
So tired of hearing from those fans that don't use their real name. Good hearing from you, Tex.
That is Tex's real name.
I know.
That is Tex's real name.
People have asked about that before, and it is in fact.
Yep.
That's not just an alias for the show.
No. We'll see. I mean, but it is. It has been a fairly confident bunch of callers we've had today, Brian.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
And be a peacock. They're starting to pull me in their direction now.
Okay, how about this? If this game is close or Baylor wins, do you think would have gone wrong for Auburn? What do you think Baylor?
There's a lot of difference in if this game is close and if Auburn loses.
Okay, sure.
Quarterback, turnovers, red zone, penalties, the same things that have happened a lot the last 2 years, especially last year, I think. Those are the things that I think can bite Auburn once again.
I'll tell you what, we were talking about a little bit off the air, third down defense. Right?
Yes.
Like this is
yeah, that's something that I think gets a little overlooked when everybody's – I mean, look, statistically, Auburn was a top 30 defense nationally last year. And they didn't give up a ton of points, like caller said. I mean, Auburn holding seven opponents to 21 points or less. But, man, they had trouble getting off the field sometimes on third down. And third and medium to long seemed to be a problem. So that's something that – hey, Sawyer Robertson would love – capitalize on a couple of those. I mean, Auburn would love to put him in those situations and come after him, but they need to get home when they come after.
Need to finish those pass rushes, Keyron Crawford, right?
Last year Auburn was close so many times,
but
couldn't quite close it out. We've got a couple minutes before we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. So why don't we? Let's get to it's Monday.
Okay.
And Brian's with us. That means we want to hear about Brian's Monday musings.
Okay. I reset. So some of these are going to be bands we've talked about. That's
okay. Okay.
All right.
Did you have
new
a
season?
Did you have a policy before that you weren't ever going to go back to the same?
Yeah, I kind of did. I was trying to something new.
Season premiere.
It's tough after a few years.
But it's a new way to go into the same band that I've covered before.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to recycle. You're not in reruns.
Right. No. So we're going back 38 years.
38
years. So that's August 25th, 1987. To the day the lead singer of a glam metal band suffered a mustard jar injury, which required surgery and the cancellation of a concert.
A mustard jar?
Yes, mustard jar injury.
Lead singer of a glam metal band suffered a mustard jar.
Can't say
injury.
That I've heard this.
Okay, I don't know. Can you tell us?
Well, name the glam metal bands from the 80s. You're going to hit it.
Def Leppard.
No.
Bon Jovi.
No.
Poison.
Getting closer.
Motley Crue.
Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
All right.
Vince Neil. He wanted French's.
And the
Engrave
Poupon.
And he got mad. He threw it, and I guess it bounced back, or somehow it hit him, and he cut his hand real bad, had to have surgery, airlifted.
Golly.
Came back and finished that tour. That was the Girls, Girls, Girls tour back in the day, so I covered that a little bit. But I like to find something different.
You know what's wild is in this.
Well, I had not heard that. Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
In this day and age, that would have been monetized by a mustard company.
You're not kidding.
It would have been all over the place.
He'd be everywhere. Yeah, he'd be in – he'd be in your social media, you know, selling Vince Neil mustard, missed opportunity there to. Luckily, didn't like. Luckily, it's not so like a tragic story.
Well, that may be the reason. I mean, do you find glass jars of mustard anymore?
Oh,
I don't know. What you
all
do.
Plastic.
No. That's right.
Thanks a lot, Motley Crue.
That's right. Didn't know that is the reason.
But yeah, and in the column I talked about, opening game. why this game is so important, even though an opening non-conference game is usually not that important,
right,
especially for an SEC team, but this one is. Just looking at the front-loaded schedule where you're playing most of your good teams in the first six games, mm-hmm, and the last six games is just one ranked team, Alabama, at the end of the year at home. I talked about that. I talked about it's time for the offense to start showing up, right? Hugh Freeze has got his talent. He needs – him and his coaches need to start producing. So that was the basis of my column.
Now, I agree with that. I mean, mm-hmm, it's and like we said earlier, I mean, it's not as though there weren't plays made,
yeah,
last year. So, I mean, if they can make the same types of plays but then capitalize and finish on things, then the offense has a chance to make that big step.
Yeah, they do. I'd love to see it Friday night, four, yeah, more days.
I made this point off the air, but I'll say it on the air too, which is, you know, I do believe that the roster has gotten better from this year to last year. I thought the roster got better from year one to year two. Mm-hmm. It probably did, but you still had instances where Auburn let games slip away, even games against teams that they'd beaten in year
one.
On
the road.
Yes.
They beat three teams on the road that came in and beat Auburn last year.
So
that's crazy.
So just improving the roster alone does not guarantee that you're going to take a step forward in wins and losses, but it's certainly better than the alternative feeling. And I remember, and longtime listeners will remember, there was a belief during the Brian Harsin era, there was a belief that the roster had gotten worse from year one to year two.
I think that belief was founded.
And you have no chance if you feel like the roster is backsliding
while you're
trying to build something.
You have no chance. You have no chance in this era.
Even if you do take the stairs all the time, you still don't have a chance.
That doesn't matter. You're right.
No, I mean even if the guys you have are totally bought in.
Yeah.
Like even if the guys you have totally believe, if that's going in the wrong direction, it's just going to be so hard to compete with the teams on the schedule in the SEC, in the modern SEC, and that's where Brian, you've mentioned how optimistic and how even confident some of our callers sound.
Yeah.
I think that's rooted in a belief that the roster has continued to get better.
And it has.
And it has. And we'll see starting Friday if that's enough.
Yep. I hope so.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. Again, you can go ahead and give us your pick if you like, but we'd like a tiebreaker.
How about number of sacks on the Baylor quarterback?
Ooh.
I mean, you're talking like.
I think that could be. That could be. I like that.
Yeah,
I mean, like that a lot because they gave up sacks last year, and Auburn is a team looking to up its sacks this year. I think that I like that.
What, over 2.5?
Oh, it better be over 2.5. I mean, if you're going to win the ball game, then I think you better be. Yeah, especially if. If Dave Aranda is saying his quarterbacks have been sacked double-digit times in their first couple of scrimmages and cut it down to four,
I think Auburn had
this
some
past time. Auburn better do as well as that.
I think Auburn had some games last year, Bill, where they thought the number was going to be over 2.5, and it wasn't.
No, you're right. It was close, but no cigar. All right, we'll get to our final break. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
This is Ray Hornsby out of Fort.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. Dan's going to be... heading to Waco. You're heading out Thursday morning early, right?
I will be, yeah, late, you know, probably more like Wednesday night now that I've done the math on when my flight leaves and when I need to get to the Atlanta airport and when I need to leave Auburn. So I will be, I'll be here tomorrow, I'll be here Wednesday, and then I will join you guys for as much as I can Thursday and Friday live from Waco.
Yeah, Friday it'll be a pregame show as kick is at 7 o'clock. And Brian, we're hoping that the little news that you passed along that gets settled.
Yes,
the deal is for those of us and you listening that have YouTube TV,
I might be switching.
Yeah, Fox and YouTube are right now in negotiations,
yes,
and sometimes those get worked out. Dan, I hope you're right, and I think you probably are. That with the NFL season coming up. there should be some urgency on the part of YouTube to go ahead and get this settled.
I think we are going to see, especially as companies launch their own standalone services, we are going to see companies willing to play hardball more and more with cable providers to get their money.
Yep.
And yeah, I hope this isn't the, you know, sort of the opening salvo in that, because I know Fox has a streaming service launching for its channels and sports access. ESPN launching the ESPN streaming service next month as well. And I wonder if we're going to start seeing more of these kind of fights, and maybe even channels willing to willing to shut the door and drive people to their streaming services.
Yeah, so just got confirmation. Yes, Coach Don Dunn will be in on Thursday and Friday. We'll also check in with Ferg at some point, I believe, during the show Thursday. He'll already be out there, so we'll check in with him from out there as well.
Ferg and Jason are going to be on the hunt for barbecue.
That's right.
on Thursday after landing in Dallas.
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence that they'll find
something.
Oh, well, you know, and our connect Taylor, the new football SID, he was at North Texas last season in Denton, so he knows a lot of the spots out there. Shout out to Taylor Bryan, by the way. I haven't mentioned him, but he's doing a good job as the new strategic communications guy there in the athletic
department. Oh, I like that. That's much better way to describe it. So. Yeah, he is the associate AD for strategic communications.
That's right.
That's right. All right. So, Brian, what's your plan for the Labor Day weekend?
Well, that's coming up.
That's what's crazy.
Yeah. Well, next Monday, we've got a press conference, I believe. So that's going to cut.
We'll
Labor
have a
Day
press a conference.
Short.
We'll have a show next Monday, by the way. Too.
Oh yeah. There you go. I'll be here. But we'll have tons of coverage this week leading up to the big game Friday night and. Baylor, we'll have anything else that pops up, you know, sports-wise or recruiting-wise. We'll
you know, we went through the whole show, didn't even mention Braylon Womack.
Yeah, how about that? Huge pickup, 5-star Auburn, up 22 in the country. They were 74th on July 1st, their ranking in the team recruiting rankings. Now they're 22nd, so big move.
Yeah, no question. All right, Brian, again, looking forward to everything you guys have got here during the week, and yeah, we will we'll see you at the press conference. I would think we'll be back to the morning press conference next week, since they practiced this morning. They couldn't have the press conference at when we.
Yeah, sounds perfect.
All right, don't see you before next Monday. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
I'm glad to see you back in the studio and healing up.
So I'm just looking forward to the night where I can get a whole night's sleep. All right, Dan and I'll be back in tomorrow. We're going to Andy Burcham will be joining us by phone tomorrow, voice of the Tigers. Then we'll check in with Jake Crane in hour number two, and love to hear from you as well. But we're out of time here on the Monday edition of The Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.